Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show, brought to you by the Desai Group. The Desai Group, getting the real work of innovation done. Visit them on the web at desai.com, D-E-S-A-I.com. The High Velocity Radio Show is where we celebrate innovative professionals producing better results in less time. Produced and directed by Lee Cantor and brought to you live from the Radio X studio in Atlanta, Georgia. Now here's your host, Stone Payton.
Welcome to the show, everybody. This is Stone Payton, your host for the High Velocity Radio Show, turning the dials and pushing the buttons and making all the magic happen. My producer and co-host, Lee Cantor. How you doing, Lee?
I am doing awesome, Stone. How about you in this spring day here, huh?
Yeah, I get up this morning, put my golf shirt on, walk out to the garage, and I had a quick wardrobe shift real fast.
I know, 70 one day, 40 the next.
So what are you going to do this week? You taking the kids down for spring break?
No, my kid's down there already. I'm here working.
Yeah, we're headed down to Pensacola to Granddad's house on Wednesday morning.
Does that get as hot as... it doesn't get as hot as South Florida, right?
Oh, no. But it'll be warmer than it is here, I guarantee right. you. Absolutely.
So what do we got on tap today?
Hey, we've got a terrific show. A little bit later in the program, we're going to hear from a representative with the Georgia Department of Transportation. And they've got some neat things going on there, and excited to tell you about that. But first up on the High Velocity Radio Show is John Campo. He's the president of John T. Campo & Associates. It's an architectural firm that's been in business since 1985. Some very interesting things that they're doing to help builders and developers, and really been excited about bringing John and the work they're doing to you. Welcome to the show, John Campo.
Good morning, Stone. Thank you very much. Good morning, Lee.
How you doing? How's the weather in New Orleans so we know what to expect tomorrow?
It's about 40 degrees cooler than it was yesterday. We've got a pretty good north wind blowing in today, but it's still bright and sunny, just a little cool. So winter's about to totally let go. I guess we've got three or four more days of cool weather.
Well, we're delighted to have you on the show. Before we dive too deep, John, how about giving our listeners a brief overview, a little history on your firm?
Sure. Campo Architects, as you said, was started in 1985, based in New Orleans. And our office, over the years, we're a national practice now, although we're in New Orleans. We practice in over 20 states. Our markets include hospitality, healthcare, multifamily, educational, and post-Katrina military work. So that's kind of a brief overview of the firm and its geography.
And you have several offices around the country. You're in New Orleans. Where else?
We have opened an office in Las Vegas. That opened in July of 2008.
So you're a blackjack player? What in the world?
They have a casino? You're opening some casino?
What prompted you to have an office in Las Vegas?
Well, specifically Hurricane Katrina. That event caused us to quickly accelerate certain parts of our strategic plan. One of them was to expand into other physical locations. As I said, we practice in well over 20 states. So my wife and I, as we were living in a hotel room in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, trying to figure out what else was going to become of the situation, we made a commitment that we needed a safe place for our family and our business, as well as a location that would continue offering opportunities. So last I checked, Las Vegas hasn't had any hurricanes, so that's one of the primary reasons. But it also serves our West Coast clients very well.
Well, that must have been a really tough and trying time for your employees, for your customers, for your partners. What was that like living through that Katrina situation?
Well, you know, at first it was, I'll use the word shock because that was the best example. You know, you leave your office on a Friday afternoon expecting Monday you'll be coming back in as normal, and then that doesn't happen. A hurricane turns, and we all know what happened. You know, not being able to come back to the office for a couple of months, it caused us to really be tested. But I will say that Campo Architects, we took care of our family. One of our clients that owns the Embassy Suites Hotel in Baton Rouge, that's Felcor Lodging Trust out of Dallas, they opened their doors to us, and they housed my family and what was left of our firm. Most of our employees were from out of state, so many of them left and decided they did not want to come back.
Mm-hmm.
But we lived through it. We made sure everybody got paid, and the good news is, The old saying, if it doesn't kill you, it makes you stronger. We're plenty strong now.
Now, during the hurricane and the aftermath of that, how did you guys really stick together when everything was so chaotic?
Well, the Internet is a wonderful thing, and we were able from Dallas, Texas, to communicate with all of our staff and obtain a status, wire them their, you know, the event happened on August 29th, which was just a handful of days from another pay period. So we were able to wire them funds no matter where they were. Some of them were in Caracas, Venezuela. We had one architect from Russia. But we were able to communicate and get back the employees that were going to return. And we all lived in the embassy suites and rented one of their meeting rooms and set up a makeshift office as quickly as possible, bought new computers, and had some great clients that really bent over backwards to keep us going.
John, we were prompted to have you on the show for a reason. Your firm has a real reputation for taking a very innovative approach to reaching their market. Can you let our listeners know about some of the specialized services that you guys offer that truly are innovative and I think separate you from the rest of the market?
Certainly. We have always practiced about 50% of our volume has been in the adaptive reuse of historic structures. Going all the way back to 1983, my first project in New Orleans was as a consulting architect on the Jack's Brewery. And over 2.5 decades now, we've developed really a specialized business that is adjunct to our architectural practice with respect to historic tax credits. That sounds like something fairly basic, but quite frankly, it is innovative. And the reason we make it innovative is it's integral now with our architectural practice. The net result, particularly now in a recessionary environment, is these tax credits are essentially converted to equity. And if you have a project that, I don't know, we just finished a project that's a $15 million hospital project, and imagine if on that project, via state and federal historic tax credits, 30, 40, 50% of those costs are returned back essentially in cash.
Wow.
And so the historic tax credit specialty that our firm has, the benefit is one, it is great architecture, but secondly, our clients hire us because we were able to return to them phenomenal value, and it is a specialized service. What we've found, particularly now that we're taking this part of our practice out of state, we're working in Phoenix, Amarillo, and soon to be Chicago, is many clients outside of the Louisiana-Mississippi area are not as familiar with the historic tax credit nor its benefit. And so we see, even in a recession, this is a shining star because it's getting deals done that otherwise would have not been able to get financed. It closes that right now, Stone. A lot of lenders, if they are actually lending money, 50% equity is not unheard of these days.
Now, can you share a story maybe where a client was thinking about doing something and you steered them this way, and then what happened, you know, how it saved them money, and plus the beautiful reconstruction that happened?
Sure. I'll use an example that is a hotel in New Orleans. The Embassy Suites was one of them, but the Country Inn and Suites by Carlson. Carlson Hotels is a client of ours out of Minneapolis, and they own the Radisson, Regent, several brands. They came to New Orleans pre-Katrina and made a commitment to developing a hotel here, had looked at approximately 15 sites, and I happen to know of a site that they had not seen that had historic buildings. So we submitted the information to the client, and they really came back and said, "Are you sure that you can do this?" I said, "You know, we have countless examples where yes, it is for real." And so that we took them through the process, and that project, we ended up the client's expectations when we started was about $3.5 million in historic tax credit dollars, and by the time the project was concluded, we were closer to $7 million. On a $20 million project. And so the buildings were essentially converted from warehouses that were used from storing tobacco and sugar over 100 years ago. Some of them were actually residents that had developed condos in the late 1800s. And we combined seven historic buildings. It was a Rubik's Cube because there were several items that needed attention where certain interests from the historic groups were totally opposite of the state fire marshal, and we were able to obtain approvals through that process. And that result is an award-winning hotel that, as I understand, was number one in the Carlson chain for Country Inn and Suites. So that is an example of taking historic buildings. The client was not familiar with it and had the courage to take the risk with us, and that's a hotel project that was just completed. We also, I mentioned the hospital. St. Charles Surgical Center is a newly opened facility, and it's exclusively a hospital for women that have breast cancer, and it's a surgical hospital that is specific to that. But in the middle of it is an historic building, and similar thing. We were able to obtain these tax credits and convert them to equity.
Well, and it sounds like that Campo Architects is uniquely qualified to navigate people through this process, which I assume is probably not easy to do unless you've been there and done that.
25 years of it, I guess we start to make it look easy, but it's really not.
You're starting to get a feel for it. And kind of along those lines, tell us a little something about this this concept of simultaneous negotiations.
Well, Stone, that concept is something we termed it simultaneous negotiations for lack of a better word, but essentially on historic tax credit projects, there are stakeholders that all have different requirements and agendas. For instance, in New Orleans, you have the City of New Orleans Permit Department, the State of Louisiana State Fire Marshal, local historic commissions, and then what is called SHPO, that's an acronym for State Historic Preservation Office, and at the federal level, the National Park Service. Simultaneous negotiations essentially means that at the beginning of the project, Campo Architects is hired as the architect and the tax credit consultant, and collectively, at the very beginning, we start negotiating with all of those agencies simultaneously in order to make the project go fast. We take the project schedule and integrate into it all of the tasks that need to happen for the approvals on the tax credit side, as well as the normal tasks that are associated with the design and construction. I'll give you a quick example. State Fire Marshal, the project I just mentioned to you, the Country Inn & Suites, if you look at that online, you'll see the lobby has these beautiful exposed heavy timber beams. Well, that's because it was deemed very significant by the historic folks at all levels that those beams be exposed. And that was diametrically opposed to the state fire marshal that says, no, that's not allowed in a five-story building. You need to wrap that and fireproof it. And what we were able to do, and this is, I'm getting into the details now, but some of the waivers that we're getting, and that's one of them, we were able to obtain an equivalent degree of safety with the state fire marshal that said, okay, we'll let you expose them because you have a deluge system and the sprinkler system that gives us an equivalent degree of safety. And so that's a good example of how many times during simultaneous negotiations, you've got stakeholders at opposite ends of the spectrum, and we are the glue that creates the buy-in from all the agencies, so that at the time that the permit is issued and construction starts, all of that heavy lifting is done and it goes. And that's the innovative part that makes it go fast.
Now, do you ever have any clients that they get kind of overwhelmed by this and they say, you know what, you're dealing with the government at so many different levels and so many departments that this process is going to take forever that, you know, I got to bail, that I just can't wait?
I'll answer it this way. If Campo Architects is brought into the process day one, then we're able to manage our clients' expectations, educate them in advance, and show them a schedule that we hit where we go through it, and so that they don't give up on the process. That question really is pointed to some of the train wrecks we inherit. Some clients, that's the correct term, I guess, because some clients will, well, let's just say some of our competitors will come in and promote themselves as doing the same service, but they only can do a portion of the service. Many times accounting firms, legal firms can do the approval process for the historic tax credit, but they do it in a vacuum. And we have had projects where the client hired, separate and apart from the architect, another entity to do just a tax credit portion. They don't understand simultaneous negotiations, and here's where the train wreck occurs. Client has purchased the property, paid the soft costs, everybody is, you know, the designers have drawn the project, construction documents are finished, and they are ready to start construction, and the permit always comes back with conditions. So does the tax credit. And whenever National Park Service has conditions that are opposed to some of the items that are in the permit office's review, therein is the train wreck, because the project stops.
Yeah.
If you don't satisfy the National Park Service in SHPO, then you're not going to get your tax credits. If you're unable to satisfy the authority having jurisdiction for the permit, you're not going to get to build it. And that's where the project stalls.
So there's your lesson, Lee. Call Campo early.
Early
and
often. Exactly. Have him on speed dial.
John, it's been an absolute delight having you on. Got a couple of questions for you. One, I want to make sure that our listeners know exactly how to get in touch with you. What's the best way for them to get in touch with you guys?
Well, the best way in terms of our New Orleans office is 504-598-4440. We have a website that gives all of the information in terms of email addresses, so they can contact me directly by email or by phone, either the Las Vegas office or the New Orleans office. They're connected with the Internet, so it's pretty seamless.
Great. Well, listen, before we let you go, and I hope you got a little bit of a heads up on this, but we have a little tradition here on the High Velocity Radio Show where we ask each guest to share a mistake that they've made somewhere in their career, and really, more importantly, what they learned from it. Could we get you to do that for us, John?
I can. This is a little bit of an unusual mistake, but in 2007, as bad as the Katrina event was, we came back to New Orleans and had a deluge of work. And there was a point in time in 2007 where I did not say no to a project. And quickly after taking on, we were full. We had as much as we could do, and I took on one project too many. We were fortunate enough via working a tremendous amount of overtime, and the firm had some burnout, of satisfying that client's needs. But it was the first time in my career we turned down over $100 million worth of work in 2007 because we just couldn't handle it anymore.
Wow. But you really do have to learn how and when to say no, don't you?
Absolutely, and that was my first lesson in that experience. So that would probably be, our clients expect a level of service from us and a schedule that we meet because time is money in this business. And that particular event was, I would say, a pretty big mistake. We were able to overcome it, but there was a price to pay in terms of firm burnout.
John, thank you so much for being on the show, and I hope you'll come back and get us updated on new projects maybe down the road a little bit.
Would love to do that. Thank you very much, gentlemen. I enjoyed this.
Yeah, we did too. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Next up on the High Velocity Radio Show, I'm delighted to bring to you someone local, a representative from the Georgia Department of Transportation, has a great deal to share with us about some innovative programs right here in the local area that I think might surprise some of you. I certainly had no idea that there was that much support and information available to us. Please welcome to the show Miss Monica Luck. Welcome to the show, Monica.
Thank you, Stone.
So what's happening at the Georgia Department of Transportation? Anything new?
Well, we launched 511 in 2007, and after about 18 months of really trying to push it out there to the general public, it's starting to catch on.
So tell us more about 511. It's like 911, but it has to do
better.
With...
It's better than 911, right?
That's right. 511 is Georgia's real-time traffic and travel information service. It's based on a national initiative that all of the travel information numbers in the United States convert to this one simple three-digit number. And Georgia launched in 2007 as the 30th state. But one of our main advantages for Georgia 511 is that we are one of only three states that also has live operators in addition to our automated system. And that has proven to be extremely valuable because not only can people get real-time traffic information from our automated system, but they can also call in to report incidents and accidents throughout the state.
Yeah, yeah.
So how would it work? If South Georgia, Atlanta, is there a menu option? Like, how do they know where I am and give me the relevant traffic that I need?
Well, if you want to use the automated system, you can dial 511, press 2, and then the system will ask you what interstate or state route you're looking for information on. And but if you want to talk to a live operator, you want to report an incident, or if you need hero assistance in Metro Atlanta, for example, you press 1, you get to the live operators at our Transportation Management Center in downtown Atlanta, and they can help you, and you just tell them where you are.
Well, I'm not going to lie to you, Monica. Well, let me scratch. I'm not going to lie to you during this broadcast, okay? But I got to be honest. I don't think that I've ever really thought of Department of Transportation and the term innovation. Certainly never used it in the same sentence, but that's not the case at all. I mean, you've got this 511. You just mentioned something called HERO. I mean, you guys have a lot of innovative things cooking, and I mean, I think it's something that our listeners and the public needs to know about. Say more about this HERO thing.
Well, the HERO program actually is one of the best recognized programs that DOT has. In fact, I get a lot of letters and emails every week from satisfied customers, motorists who were stranded on the side of the road, and a HERO came along. And I mean, the HEROs are amazing. It stands for Highway Emergency Response Operator, and they ride in these big yellow trucks that you see on the interstate.
Oh, yeah, I've seen these. You've seen these, Lee.
Yes.
Right. So they go over, they train for over 500 hours in the classroom and on the road, and they are trained as first responders. They help during a traffic accident. They help with traffic control, which frees up law enforcement and fire and ambulance to do their jobs instead of having to manage, you know, cones and make sure that people don't run into the hot zone and things like that. But they also will give you a little gas, which we found out during the gas shortage last year was extremely valuable. They will jump your battery, change your tire, whatever it does, whatever they can do to try to help people get back on the road, because the side of an interstate with people zooming by you at 70 miles an hour is not a safe place to be.
And so it's good for you if you're the traveler in trouble, but it's good for the flow of traffic and everyone else too.
Absolutely, because that's part of the Department of Transportation's mission, is to maintain a seamless, safe transportation system for the citizens of Georgia. And this is a huge part of it, because when you have a traffic backup, for example, during a primary incident, the chances of your being in a secondary incident go up every 2 minutes. And
really. So
it's really vital to keep the roads open as much as possible. Bad traffic it's bad for productivity. We've done studies where if you have one lane on 285 blocked for an hour, it basically costs the state $200,000.
Wow.
So, you know, and just imagine if all lanes were blocked because there was some massive tractor-trailer incident.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of what we do at the Traffic Management Center, is monitor the roads with our cameras as part of our navigator system. That was originally part of the security for the Olympics, but we have expanded it. So it includes all of 285, 75, 85, 400, and then, you know, we have the HEROs that also patrol. They report in. And we work with all the 911 agencies and all the police departments and so on to try to make sure that if there's an accident, that it's responded to very quickly and handled very quickly.
How many HEROs do you have floating around?
We have right now about 85 HEROs, and actually we just expanded to 30 routes. So we go from, like on I-75, for example, we go all the way from Bartow County down to South Henry County in McDonough.
And so they're always on the road, or are they just driving around, trolling?
No, they're
for
sitting
accidents?
In the garage eating donuts
waiting
until you call.
Until
right?
you call? I mean, how does it work? Like a taxi, or is it more of like on call?
Well, we have several shifts, and the two main shifts are the weekday shifts that start at about 6 a.m., and go in for the next 16 hours to cover both main rush hours, and those are our Alpha and Bravo shifts. Our Delta shift is overnight. We don't have, of course, as many heroes out on the road during that. And then our Charlie shift is weekend, and they will patrol for 12 hours, and then they're on call. So, I mean, it's a lot of driving.
So they're just driving around.
Well, you have 30 routes, and you know, like we have shorter routes for the more congested segments of roadway, for instance, the downtown connector,
mm-hmm.
where they can, you know, because you want them to be able to get there and get whatever it is out of the road before traffic gets so backed up that
right.
you can't get to the scene. So that's how they...
What's the most common reason, like what's the most common thing they do when they help?
As far as a traffic accident?
Or just like if someone's on the side of the road, do they, if someone like gets a flat tire and they're on the side of the road, they'll pull over immediately and help them? Is that how it works?
That's right. And if they're stuck in a travel lane, we have a lot of stalls. People run out of gas or their battery dies or something. And the hero can push or pull them to the side of the road so they're not, you know, a sitting duck, as it were.
Well, they probably need some counseling skills, too, because you're going to feel like an idiot if you run out of gas, like on 285, right?
A lot of people they just sing their praises. You know, they say they're so professional and so polite. And that's part of the training, too. I mean, you know, when you pull up behind somebody who's in an absolute state of panic, you got to have some customer service skills to calm them down and then get them to agree to let you push their car over to the side of the road. But these hero trucks are pretty amazing. They can push or pull a fully loaded 80,000-pound tractor trailer out of the roadway.
But wow. You don't just issue a cape and leotards and throw them just in a yellow
anybody.
Truck and turn them loose. They go through some formal training.
They go through about a 4-month training process. So, yeah.
You mentioned a navigator program. Now, I know sometimes I'll be at home and my wife will call me and go, "What's traffic like?" And I'll go to this website. Is it what, GA Navigator? Is that?
It's www.georgia-navigator.com. And
right.
that is the website that has the maps. And
it has the maps and the colors.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. And you look for green.
And
that's
I'm
what
like,
you're looking for.
Yeah.
That's
you don't right. want to go down 75. I tell her, you know, I can see it right there. It's visual.
Right.
How long have you been doing that with that website?
That website actually has been up ever since we started Navigator in 1996, before the Olympics. But, of course, since we've expanded our system with the fiber optic cable, the CCTV cameras, our changeable message signs, you know, the big overhead signs
yeah,
that tell
yeah.
you major accident ahead, don't go there. We've actually been able to expand our coverage on the map and show speed and traffic detection. And then, of course, we... have the still images from our CCTV cameras so that you can actually look at whatever segment of roadway you want to and see what the traffic is like.
Now, the picture I get is, you know, when you watch 24 and you got Jack Bauer in that room and you have all
right,
those
all
TV
the,
screens.
All the split screen.
Is there anything like that? I mean, do you have that movie, The Italian Job, remember when they shut everything down?
Right.
Is it anything like that? Do you have a room with those great big TVs and people are watching stuff?
Actually, we do. We have... We also have operators 24 hours a day. They each have three screens that they can set up a quad look, you know, so they can look at 12 cameras at once. And then we have a huge, what we call our X wall, that has 9 very large projector screens where we can, everybody can see a major accident going on.
Wow. It's called CTU. That's what they call it.
CT who?
CTU.
I'd like to go down there and see that sometime. That would be cool.
Well, as a matter of fact, we do tours.
Really?
Yeah. And they're free.
Where is it at?
The Transportation Management Center is at 935 East Confederate Avenue, which is right between Boulevard and Merlin near Grant Park. So anytime you want to come down, we do tours. And we'll even bring out a hero truck, and you can see it up close and personal without having to be stuck on the side of the road.
That would be the best way to see
Maybe
it.
Maybe they'll let you go around one ship.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It'll get the cape and
right.
everything. I love that. The hero acronym. That's great.
That's right.
Terrific. So what's the most fun part of your job, and what, if anything, do you find frustrating?
There's nothing frustrating in a job like this.
The frustrating thing is not being able to give alternate routes. Because we have a policy, unfortunately, but if we can't see an arterial road, meaning like a 4-lane highway, like Roswell Road in Sandy Springs that
mm-hmm.
goes up to Roswell, the reason that we can't give alternate routes all the time, unless there's a specific detour set up, is that Roswell Road, for example, Highway 9, has about 18% of the capacity of Georgia 400. So right. if you told everybody, okay, get off of Georgia 400 and get on Highway 9, how fast would it fill up? In about maybe 5 minutes.
Now then, you got a bigger problem than what you started with.
And then you have gridlock. So, you know, as part of that, we're all trying to just make sure that we keep the roads open and then we don't have that dilemma. You know, so that's
but
been
could
my
you do
main
instead
thing.
Of one alternate route, just say here's three options and then you kind of dilute that?
Well, that's something that I'm working on myself, actually.
A personal Monica mission, right?
that's something I'm working on myself, and I'm probably going to propose it at some point in the near future. I'm calling it the Backroads Buddy Program.
That's right. Why don't you make a little book, you know, Atlanta Shortcuts, and
I
just
like
alternative
it.
Routes around town.
So are there any officially endorsed programs, new stuff coming up that we ought to know about that you're allowed to talk about?
Oh, sure. Well, the Towing and Recovery Incentive Program that Georgia DOT has started in accordance with a number of other agencies like the Georgia Regional Transportation Authority and a number of concerned agencies in what we call the Time Task Force, which is a traffic incident management group. We started this in January of 2008 and have had phenomenal success with it. And what it is we have a program where we will provide bonuses to heavy wrecker operators for clearing a major vehicle, commercial vehicle wreck within 90 minutes.
Nice.
Yeah, so this involves tractor trailers, buses, coaches, you know, really large commercial vehicles. And there are certain criteria that have to be met for this kind of program to be activated. And working with operators at the Transportation Management Center, our heroes, and the law enforcement that's in charge, as well as, you know, the wrecker operators that are supposed to be for that certain zone, we get a, you know, a tractor trailer that's overturned, for example, and is blocking
right.
all lanes. The Towing and Recovery Incentive Program, or TRIP, is activated by the hero on scene or the supervisor. The towing and recovery operator has to be there within a certain period of time. They have to bring a certain amount of equipment. They have to have already been through a very structured and high-deal training program. And the success of this program has put it on the national stage.
Is that
and,
right?
Yeah, well, we've been able to reduce the average clearance time of a major commercial vehicle wreck by over 3 hours.
Because you don't just have Jim Bob's Wrecker Service going out there saying, yeah, we could do it. We could do it. Let me call my cousin.
Quick, push it. We're on the clock.
Right. So tell us about this. There's something going on with the HOV lanes. I've picked up a little something on the news. Can't say I remember exactly what it was. What's happening there?
Well, that's another thing. It's another tool in the toolbox. We're introducing it to the public. It's called the HOV to HOT program. And what it means is that we're going to start converting HOV lanes to what we call high occupancy toll lanes, meaning that if you have a car with three people in it, you can still ride for free. Mm-hmm. But if it's just two people, then you pay a certain fee to ride that lane. A huge part of this program, too, is that we're going to get a lot more transit options. The USDOT has already provided some funding, and that's going to involve two more park and ride lots and 36 more express buses for the Gwinnett corridor. Right now, we're looking at having public information sessions about this program. And once people find out, you know, we're not the first to do this either. We're mm-hmm. one of several that have come after an initial rollout in several cities like San Diego, Minneapolis, Miami. And they have all experienced what we're experiencing now, which is that initially the public is very skeptical about the possibility of this being a good thing. But what we've seen is that once they converted the lanes to hot lanes, people love it because they have a lane that they know all the time is just going to be open and free-flowing.
Right. And so you might be experiencing a little bit of initial backlash before the program is fully understood and all the benefits. Okay, so if you've got three people or more, it's like it always was. If you've got two, you pay a toll.
What
now,
if you have one?
Person go in it if they pay the
a
toll?
Single person can go in it, and that's the difference is between that and the HOV is that single single occupants cannot use the HOV lane at all unless they want to risk a $150, $200 fine.
Right, so they pay also if they're going to go by themselves right
now.
Well,
yeah, I'm thinking about commission-based salespeople. I mean, I don't know if you have any research on it, but I can just tell you empirically, commission-based salespeople drive faster, need to get places faster, and they're going to be happy.
That risk, you know.
And they're risk, right. They're not risk-averse. But, you know, they're going to be happy to pay the toll and get into that, you know, because they've got to get to that call. They've got to get to that meeting.
Now, what are you talking about, kind of an idea of a price range of what you're going to pay for driving in that lane?
Oh, we're very early in the stages at this point. You know, in this other cities that have converted their HOV to hot lanes, it varies widely, but it will be based on the amount of congestion that is in the general purpose lanes, the regular travel lanes.
Right.
If everything's like, you know, moving very, very slowly, then it's going to cost more for you to ride that hot lane.
How are you going to know, like, what the rate is?
Oh, we'll have all kinds of signs and electronic signs and what we call gantries that will be every half mile, so you know when you can get into the hot lane. And, you know, it'll be kind of like you have a cruise card now for Georgia 400.
Mm-hmm. Right.
What you'll have is what we call a transponder that you'll put on your windshield, kind of like the cruise card. And
oh, so you don't necessarily have to dig for change. So this is going to be a variable fee. It won't always be the same, or at least that's part of the thinking right now.
Right.
It'll be a variable. So a hot lane on a Sunday morning at 10 o'clock may not be as much.
Right. It may cost you 25
Right, but in
cents.
The heart of rush hour, it could be.
Well, I mean, that makes sense. I mean,
and then every time you get in and out of the lane, you get ding, you pay?
I don't know.
Interesting question.
It is an interesting question. It's part of the design that we're looking at right now. We're doing a lot of studies, and we're working very closely with Federal Highway and a number of these other companies that have already installed these, and we're trying to figure out what's the best thing.
Right. Would it be on all of the highways, or it would just be in the, you know, like 75, 85? Or the major highways?
The initial pilot project is supposed to come online in January of 2011, and that's going to be 14 miles on I-85 from Old Peachtree Road to just inside 285. And that's one of the most congested segments of roadway in the metro area. So,
and 400 would be good, too. Get all those rich suburbanites.
Well, and speaking of money, what's an acceptable tip for the hero guy? What's the tip policy for the hero?
Oh, we do not accept tips.
Do not
for
accept
the heroes.
Tips.
I mean, people have thrown money at these heroes, and they say, no, thank you. You know, so, but it's very sweet of people to do that, but it's totally unnecessary.
Well, before we wrap up, I've got a question to ask you about work environment, about culture. Because all kidding aside, I do think that the traditional perception is, oh, you know, that's a government operation. There's no way that they're innovative. But the truth is, I mean, they're working hard. It's obviously a very innovative group of people, always, you know, trying to see around the corner, developing new ideas. It's got to be a little bit frustrating to know that there's this other perception out there. I mean, does that wear on you? Or is it just the kind of people that are attracted to an organization like that are have the capacity to weather what other people are thinking, and they just keep going?
Well, people are always pleasantly surprised when they find out about 511 Navigator, our hero program, you know, all of these things that we have going on that try to utilize technology. I mean, I think everybody understands there is no way we can pave our way out of this traffic congestion we have, especially in the metro area. If we went to capacity as according to the projections of our population in 2025 or whatever it's going to be, we wouldn't have a single tree left.
Right.
And, you know, it's so expensive. And so part of what we do with traffic operations, with the Navigator system, 511, everything, is to try to educate people about their role. Because no one organization can solve this problem. It's going to take everybody.
Right.
And, you know, last year when we had really high gas prices, it was $4 a gallon, people really took it into their heads, I'm going to have to do something different. I'm going to go bankrupt if I'm just going to have my same old, you know, 40-mile trip one way, mm-hmm. et cetera, et cetera. And so I think that's part of why, you know, using these services like Navigator and 511 have really started to take off, because people want to know, you know, okay, I need this information so I can make the best possible decision. Should I take transit? Can I ride my own car today? Whatever it is. And we've seen that vehicle miles traveled for 2008 over 2007, for example, is way down.
And you have a much more informed traveler. Now, if you're not in the car and dialing 511, what's the best way for people to learn more about all the neat programs that you've got, a website address? What's the best way for them to find that stuff out?
Well, we do have actually our own 511 website. It's www.511ga.org.
Okay.
And then our main DOT website is www.dot.ga.gov, and that will tell you not only about these programs, but it'll tell you about all the big construction projects that are coming up, and our wildflower program, and our funding, the stimulus package that we're working on now. So any information you need about DOT, you should be able to find it at that website.
And what was the Georgia Navigator, Georgia-Navigator?
That's right, Georgia-Navigator.com.
And that has the traffic with the colors.
Oh,
that's
yeah,
right.
I like that one.
The color-coded maps, that's right.
Well, listen, before we let you go, you probably heard as we interviewed our first guest this morning, we have a little tradition here on the High Velocity Radio Show where we ask each guest to share a mistake that they've made somewhere in their career and what they've learned from it. Would you be willing to do that for us?
Sure. What I think is, never look at an opportunity and just assume that you know exactly what it's going to be. If you had told me 5 years ago that I was going to leave advertising and go work for the Department of Transportation, I would have said you were totally insane. And I'm not sure. I can't point to a mistake per se that I missed an opportunity, but I probably did. Simply because I love working in transportation. I feel like it's my avocation to try to educate people about how to keep out of traffic, which seems really, really kind of mundane, but so many people have responded to it, and it's something that we talk about all the time, that if I can help people get more educated about what we're doing and what they can do, then I feel like I've really helped boost the quality of life. And I mean, I've watched Metro Atlanta since the 70s and get this influx of population, and also the worst, you know, people say it's the worst traffic congestion in the world. So
right.
I'm just trying to do my part. And I think that working in transportation has been a wonderful second career for me, an opportunity to learn. And I probably at one point would have dismissed it back in the day.
So don't shun those opportunities. There may be a great deal more there than you think. And obviously you're surrounded by people that have that same degree of passion. Otherwise, there's no way that you would have this many programs, this well executed and available to the public. It has been an absolute delight having you on the show.
Well, thank you, Stone,
so much for joining us.
Thank you, Lee.
Until next week, this is Stone Payton, John Campo, Monica Luck, and Lee Cantor, and the entire Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.